Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health, or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Are you thinking about starting a podcast but don't know where to start? Let me take a second to tell you about Anchor by Spotify. It's the easiest way to make a podcast with everything you need all in one place. Anchor has tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. When hosting on Anchor, you can distribute your podcast across a plethora of listening platforms such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, all the big ones. It's everything you need to make a podcast all in one place. And best of all, completely free. If you're thinking about starting a podcast, do yourself a favor and check out anchor.fm or download the app to get started.
Hey everyone, if you're enjoying Inquiries of Our Reality, do me a favor and drop me a review or rating on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. While you're at it, come join the Discord or Telegram groups for the show. If you haven't already, don't forget to follow me across social media to stay updated on the show. If you'd like to support the show, you can subscribe to my Patreon for just $5 a month, where you will receive early access to Inquiries of Our Reality, Big Dumb Inquiries, and Bizarre Encounters. You can also support the show by donating on Anchor or Ko-fi, which will help me upgrade equipment and hopefully eventually do this full time so I can put out even more awesome content for you guys. If you guys want some t-shirts or other awesome merchandise for Inquiries of Our Reality, Big Dumb Inquiries, or Bizarre Encounters, stop by my Teespring store and get yourself something nice. If you're a creator or a listener, come check out Open Minds Media. We have an awesome community of great people who would love to meet you. From our featured creator podcast feed, to chat rooms, to even help questions, this is the place for you. For more information on the community, the podcast feed, and to stay updated on all the new things coming, check us out on social media, and all their links are available on our link tree. And last but not least, if anyone is interested in being a guest on the show, sponsoring the show, has a topic they want covered on the show, or you feel you can contribute to the show in any way, shape, or form, shoot me a message on social media, or feel free to email me at inquiriesofourrealitypodcast@outlook.com. All the links I mentioned are in the show description. Just tap or click the Linktree link to be directed. Or remember, linktr.ee/Inquiries of Our Reality Podcast. Thank you so much, everyone. I appreciate all of you, and I couldn't be doing this without your support. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
The reality we live in can be a very strange place. Most of the time, fact being stranger than fiction. How will we ever start to understand this reality we live in unless we question everything? Join me and a guest as we unravel the mysteries of this reality, one topic at a time. This is Inquiries of Our Reality with Shane Jones.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 65th episode of Inquiries of Our Reality. Today with me, I have Mike and Mateo from the Whatcast. How's it going today, guys?
Doing good, Shane. Thanks for having us on.
Thanks for making the time to come on the show, guys.
Absolutely.
So you always have awkward spaces in the middle when you're not using cameras because you can't see the other person's lips moving. So if all the listeners wonder why there's extended pauses, that would be why.
Yeah, it happened. It's one of the main reasons why we edit our shows, just to pull out those gaps of nothingness while we, like a discharge laugh.
I'll do that too, or there'll be like three ums in a row and you'll just be like, all right, you still want it to sound like a person talking, so I'll pull out like two of those.
Yes, we do that as well.
But for anybody that doesn't know who you guys are, why don't you let them know about what your show, what you do, who you are?
Go for it, Mike.
All right, we are the Whatcast. We've been around for a bit here. I think like 8 years or so, I think we've been doing this.
Got some OG status.
Yeah. We've been around for a bit here. But we're primarily a show that discusses the strange and the paranormal. But we try to take a different different approach than, because I mean, a lot of the stuff in the paranormal, you've got your big cases that everybody talks about, and you kind of, as a podcast that talks about the weird and the shit, you kind of have to embrace some of that stuff because people are curious about it, and the big, you know, the big cases are the ones that people tend to flock to, and those are the ones that kind of get the people started, like the gateway paranormal case, you know, like the Area 51 stuff, or I guess nowadays it would be like the Skinwalker Ranch, you know. But so we, as a show that you know primarily talks about the paranormal and weird shit, you kind of have to go after the big cases as well, but we try to take a different approach than the regular, you know, the regular takes on the case. We look at all things with a certain dose of skepticism without being debunkers, as well as being presenting the information in a way that's not so flat and dull and boring. We try to provide a bit of humor with the topics we cover, because some of the shit people have heard a million times, and if you're just going through the same basic information, who cares? You've heard that a million times. Like, especially UFO case, you could turn on Ancient Aliens and hear the same shit that most people cover at any given time. So you know, we just try to make things a little bit different and not take the paranormal so seriously.
So considering that you guys like to talk about some un-mainstream stories, I guess you could say, what's some of your favorite things that you've dug into as far as like cases that people more than likely don't know about?
Oh God, there's so many little weird things that we've come across. And it's the fun for me is second sourcing everything, finding the old books or newspaper articles it's written about in. But there's so many cases of like these one-time entities that are seen by people. This is one thing we covered called the Sky Spitter. And it was just the sighting of this giant mouth that appeared above a house. And it just started to spew out some type of liquid all over the house. And then everything, even the moisture it spit out, disappeared. There's something called the Potosi Sheep Slayer we covered. It's just this weird little 3-foot spaced man that had a knife that would suck the guts out of sheep and had a mechanical jetpack and flew away and was witnessed by a farmer.
That sounds like his ship crashed or something, and he was just going into survival mode and trying to just kill and eat anything he could find. That's what I get out of that.
Yeah. We like to cover the weird, like the weirder stuff. The weirder, the better, basically. You know, just there's so many. At the time when we started, there were so many paranormal podcasts that just took themselves way too seriously. You know, we don't like write jokes. We don't consider ourselves a comedy podcast by any means. It's more of like a eavesdropping podcast. It's just a conversation between me and Mike, and we just record that. Basically, we try to get a laugh out of each other. Basically.
I mean, I'm always down for the organic conversations, though. I feel like they turn out the best. Like, don't get me wrong, I like some structured stuff when I'm trying to get into just some information. But when I'm just like listening to a podcast and doing some stuff, I definitely prefer like the talk, open conversation style of doing things, which is like why I was telling you guys that I've been keeping up on your guys' episodes, because I really enjoy like your process of what you do and the fact that you seem like you go into a show not expecting it to be anything in particular. And then you end up with a more solid, awesome, organic episode at the end because of that.
Yeah, sometimes it works out that way. When we have stuff structured, we'll famously go off on. I mean, we're talking about taking out ums in our show earlier. There's been times where I've taken out 25 minutes of wrestling talk in the middle of a Mothman show.
So what exactly like got you guys into doing this? Was it just some random thing that you happened to be into when you were a kid? Did you have your own experiences or?
Yeah, I kind of grew up with a lot of experiences, a lot of weird shit going down thanks to my family's history and their participation and that type of stuff. And we were talking earlier, I'd been on a couple other people's shows to talk about Mothman and Injured Cold, and they were encouraging me to start my own podcast. And I said, why not? And I sat there and recorded for like, I'd say like 2 hours by myself trying to present a case on Mokelian Bembe. And after I listened to it, there's maybe like 15 minutes of what I would consider usable. That wasn't just embarrassing and just not good. And I tweeted like the day before, I'm gonna record my first episode of the podcast. And the next day I tweeted that, well, that didn't work. And funny enough, Mike responded, what didn't work? And we had followed each other for more than a year and had never said a word to each other. And I told him I'd try to record a podcast, and apparently I suck at it. And like you just said, I'll do it with you. And that was that.
So it seems like everything seems to work out for a reason, you know, like everything kind of comes full circle. And from hearing a lot of different podcaster stories on how they started, it seems to be the same thing for almost everybody, that they weren't normally a person that would start up a podcast, and then things kind of fell into the right place. And then they kind of just ran with it from there. And then it turned out into, you know, something they regularly do. And you guys being 8 years under your belt, I'm sure it's kind of the same way.
Yeah. Very by chance meeting. We still haven't even met each other. It's been 8 years and we haven't even met.
Yeah, it's the craziest thing. Like I talk to him more than I talk to people that I know in real life, and we've never met face to face. We were talking before we started recording about meeting listeners, and the listener that I had mentioned earlier that we had talked about, Mateo actually met him as well, because he traveled all around. So we've both met the same person that we wouldn't have known if we hadn't done the show, but we've never met each other.
Dude, it's the same for me and both of my co-hosts, because I do a show called Big Dumb Inquiries with Kyle Rainey from the Big Dumb Podcast. Shout out, Kyle. And he lives in Texas. So it's like, I talk to him more than I talk to most people in my life, and I've never met the dude in person. And then I do another show called Bizarre Encounters with a guy named Ghost from My Third Eye. Also, shout out to Ghost. And I talk to him constantly, like text him all fucking day. And he lives on the East Coast. So yeah, never talk to him in person. It's kind of weird how you start up a podcast and then you end up becoming these really deep friends with people that there's a good chance that you'll never actually meet face to face. And if it wasn't for that podcast, it's like you never would have had that door open to become friends with that person, you know?
Yeah, that's one of the coolest things about doing a podcast is actually meeting really cool people, not just like-minded people. You can disagree with them on a lot of things, but just cool people, and you end up actually becoming friends, meeting or not.
So I feel like it's a thing where it's like in life, you have these like, just short, shallow type conversations. But then when you're doing like a podcast, you get into some like really, really deep stuff and some really, really deep thoughts on both sides. So it's like you get to know somebody way better, because the only form of contact you have is straight vocal communication, you know? So it's like you really get to know the inner workings of somebody like through their words and the things they say. And it's like a weird feeling that as like humans, it's still like a relatively new thing. And it's like, I feel like we don't know how to like properly process the fact that we can have a best friend that we'll never physically see.
Right. Right.
Super weird. But, I guess hopping into, I know both of you guys said you've had some, experiences going on in your life, through the years. So I'd love to get into some of those experiences and, kind of dissect them and learn a little bit about them.
Yeah, I had one that I shared on our show. That's kind of weird, kind of funny a little bit, but with things that preceded that, I knew that it wasn't something that was natural. One of the first experiences I had is maybe 6 years old. And the way my bedroom was set up is that my head was next to the door and my feet, you know, so the door is right next to the head of my bed. And I got blasted with a bunch of light and it woke me up. But I says, as I sat up, I realized that my bed was now in the middle of the room. So if somebody turned on the hallway light with my door open, it wouldn't have bothered me where my bed normally was. But my bed had been moved and the light hit me directly in the face. So I sat up and looked out the door. And as I looked, I shit you not, like a trail of like three colored eggs. And I saw the back half of like a really giant rabbit walk past my door. And that's something I saw and I told my parents about because my bed had moved and everything. I remember just laying back down and going to sleep and the bed was in its right spot in the morning. But the funny thing about that story is that wasn't one I usually shared, but that's what happened when I was six. And I would say like 20 years later, I was telling that story to my sister and she said, "No shit." And I said, "Yeah." She goes, "You know, did he have a blue vest on?" And I said, "Yes." And he was carrying this color basket. I said, "Yeah." She goes, "Yeah, he walked right past your room and went into mine." And that kind of made me laugh when she said that. I mean, she described what it was wearing to a T. The inside of his vest was a separate color than the outside. And she even got that right. She saw the same thing.
I mean, experiences like that just bring it home, you know, because it's like you'll see something and you'll question it yourself. But as soon as there's somebody else that sees the same exact thing, it brings a whole line of questions, but it just brings confirmation to what you did see. So it's always weird when you have experiences where more than one person gets to see the being or entity, whatever you want to call it.
Right. It was such a silly story. It was one I never really told. There's plenty of stories I can tell about weird shit that I've experienced. And that one I always left out because it was silly until my sister, you know, confirmed that she had seen it as well. It kind of gave it a whole new validity for me.
Was this relatively recently that she confirmed this?
Now it's probably, you know, 6 years ago when she confirmed it, but that happened when I was a little kid and we had never talked about it.
What randomly brought that up that you guys were able to finally confirm that?
I think I was telling her about starting the Whatcast and was just recounting all the weird stuff that we all had gone through.
I didn't know if it was some other experience that popped up and happened. You guys were like, "Hey, I saw something like that sooner." But some of your other experiences I'd love to hear also. I guess since you said that one was kind of like one of your ones you didn't tell, like if you were going to tell about your experiences, like what do you feel are your main experiences where they you feel like gives it the most justification for you yourself?
I would say my shadow person experience. It's not a typical shadow person experience. At the time I was living in a townhouse. So if you walk in the front door, there's stairs immediately to your left and then a walkway into the living room. But under the stairs, there's a spot where there was a desk set up and a computer. And I had just gotten home from work and I walked right to the computer. I had some stuff I had to do on the computer and I set my backpack down. And I walked to the foot of the stairs and I heard a bunch of like banging around upstairs, somebody moving something. And I thought it was my girlfriend at the time. So I called up and told her, "Hey, it's me. I'm home." And I went back to the computer desk and sat down. And I can hear her walking around up there. And I figured she was listening to music on headphones or something like that. And then there's a pretty loud bang, a sharp bang. So I went back to the bottom of the stairs. And I yelled up to see if she's okay, and she didn't answer me. So I went back to the computer to turn it off. So I sat down at the computer desk, and I had headphones on, big can headphones. I was listening to death metal at the time, so really loud music. And over that music, I heard a loud rumbling from above me on the steps. And as soon as I can kind of, before I moved my head to look at the, you know, what was coming down the stairs, I kind of looked with my eyes before I moved my head, and there was a jet black figure that ran down the stairs and took the corner to come down this hallway, and it rushed me. And I'm a pretty big guy, and it was able to knock me off the chair I was on. And I remember as I was turning and I looked right at its face as it got to me, I can see human eyeballs and teeth visible inside the face of this thing. And as it got to me to knock me over, I heard it. It let out a giant breath. And I heard it over the music in my headphones and everything. And I went upstairs and my girlfriend wasn't home at all. She was still at work.
That sounds almost like a demonic entity to a certain extent. Cause like, I don't know, maybe it's like a different offshoot of shadow people, but I've had a lot of shadow people experiences myself. And it's not a very common thing to see a face involved. If anything, it's usually like eyes. So it almost makes me wonder if there was something else to that presence or if it was like some form of like a demonic presence. But
right.
For the listeners that have already heard this, I'm sorry, but I'm going to tell the story anyways. I guess I'll go into my younger shadow person experiences later on in the show if we get into that. But this one particular faster story, I'll tell you about because it reminded me of yours a little bit. My girlfriend and I used to go to this place called Northville Psychiatric Hospital. And it was just like an abandoned hospital. We should just go and like urban explore it and stuff. And we had this one time that we don't normally go down into the basement. They call them like the tunnels because they lead into a bunch of different directions under Northville. And, you know, they say that they're haunted, all that kind of fun shit. It being a psychiatric hospital to begin with, there's obviously some weird spirits and aura to the place to begin with. But we decided to go down in the basement one day. And we go into the basement and there's like this wall that's like partly knocked down. It's like kind of like a room on the other side of it. So I'm the first one to walk in there because I'm with my girlfriend and her friend. And as soon as I walk in there, I hear something to the right of me say, run. And as I'm looking forward, there's like one of those like cart buggy type looking fucking things like they have at like hospitals, you know, they roll in the hallway. And this thing stands up. And I've had a lot of people say that it sounds like a wraith. I don't remember however you say that. But it was like pale, pasty, white skin, tall and lanky. And then when I say it had like long black hair, I mean like on the top of its head, it was very like scraggly, dirty. I don't know. It almost looked like a cannibalistic looking creature. And I got to see it for a whole, like, it felt like a minute, but I'm sure it was probably like a split of a second. And I took off running up the stairs. I go to leave. And my girlfriend's like taking pictures backwards. And we ended up getting this one kind of weird picture that I'll send to you guys after the show. But the shadow person part starts when we get home. So we get home and it's nighttime, of course. We both live at that time upstairs at our parents' house. So we both come downstairs to go get a snack that night. And she walks first into the kitchen. I'm standing at the bottom of the stairs. And as she takes off to the kitchen, both of our eyes make contact with this one spot on the couch right at the corner. It was like the shape of a person, like a shadow person. And you obviously couldn't make out any features. And it was just a dark enough shadow that you can't see through it. But it was dark down there. So it was like darker than the rest of the room in the shape of a person. And her just being like staring at it, doing that thing where you don't know how to react. She like walks right past it directly in front of it, staring at it the whole time. And I'm at the bottom of the stairs and we both look at each other and we look back and it's gone. We both are like, did you see that? She's like, yeah, I saw that. So kind of a combination between a shadow person thing and the two person confirmation of something. But yeah, that was probably not, I'd say my most justifiable shadow person story, just because of the fact that there was two people that very clear as day saw it.
Right. Wow. Yeah. It's always funny how it's darker than the other shadows in the room. It's, you can tell that it's shape kind of, because it's darker than, it's like the darkest thing in the room.
Yeah. It's like, you can't decipher what it is, which is a lot of people's theory, is that it's like, it may be something that looks totally different than how we perceive it, just because our eyes may not be able to perceive what it looks like. Like, it could be an entity that has full details of features, but our eyes can't perceive it. So it comes out as a dark shadow. And in turn, it's kind of weird, because it's like, there must be some solidness to it, because it doesn't make sense that a shadow can block out the light behind it that clearly and thick, especially when it's in an instance like that where it was a pitch black room to begin with. Like, I don't know, it's just weird and hard to explain unless you've seen it yourself.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Mike, you've had a shadow person experience, and you describe it the same way, right?
I mean, I wouldn't really say that I had a shadow person experience.
I'd love to hear this story, by the way.
So it wasn't... it's more seeing things out of the corner of my eye and like feeling movement along with it.
Oh, like, and the wisps, if you guys ever like, begin to shadow like, people.
We were just talking about it on a show recently where what had happened was it was more like a, how would I describe it? I guess the way that I thought about it was that it was like, I thought it was like one of my cats, like out of the corner of my eye, I saw a dark and I've got two black cats. And I have five cats, but two of them are black but it's in places where my cats are not, like when I'm down in my basement, and my cats don't come down here. And all of a sudden I'll like see something out of the corner of my eye, like a cat rushing up from behind me to go past me. And then I'll like feel something brush across my leg and there's nothing there.
So I'm going to ask this because I'm curious. I have eight cats myself. And do you believe yourself that cats are linked to the paranormal world somehow, especially black cats? Because more often than not, if I have a cat that's staring at something off in the random distance, it's usually one of my black cats. Or I have this. Okay, so just a quick little story. Female orange cats are very rare because I guess the orange coloring is in the chromosomes. So theoretically, if you have a female orange cat, they say that they have some type of like chromosome issue. So I kind of take that as they may have some form of like a Down syndrome or something like that, because I believe that that's a chromosome issue. So I have this one cat that's an orange female, and she's just like the most awkward fucking spacey cat in the entire fucking world. But other than the black cat, she's always the one that's staring in weird directions. So like, what do you guys believe with the whole like tie between cats and the paranormal?
I could see it, but I don't think it's necessarily limited to cats. Cause I had, when I was younger, I had a dog and my parents' house was haunted. Well, I say haunted. I had some paranormal experiences at my parents' house. And I got this dog, and once I had the dog, she started like barking at things that weren't there and just like looking at a wall and barking. And once I got her, all the paranormal activity stopped and there was like nothing there. Like at this house, I full on saw like full body apparitions, you know,
like what did you see exactly? If you could describe them, I'm always curious what they look like.
Yeah. So, what had happened when there was when I saw this figure, I was sitting in a corner of the room in a chair. There's a recliner chair in the corner of this one room. And through or from this position, I could look through and see the dining room, which kind of connected to the room I was in. And then on the other side of the doorway where I couldn't quite see would be the entrance to the kitchen. And into the kitchen or from the direction of the kitchen, I saw this like white figure, and I know it's cliche to say it's a white figure, but it was well, I guess it would be more accurate to say pale figure. But it came around the corner and it leaned against the entranceway on the corner there and looked in from the entranceway to the dining room into the room that I was sitting in the chair, and just kind of like leaned and was like, it looked like it was looking at me. And at the time my parents were both awake, and my dad was wearing a white sweatshirt with light gray sweatpants. So I thought maybe it was him. So I called out to him, and then my dad responded, and it happened. He was sitting on the other side of the room, and I just didn't notice that he was there. So I looked over at him, and then I looked back at the figure. The figure pushed itself off from the corner of the wall, and it turned, but it didn't turn in the direction towards the door. It like made a full like circular turn. So like it was facing me, and then it turned away from me to turn all the way around. So like its back would face me, and then it turned so I saw the other side, and then went back through the door it came in. So then I told my dad, I think there's someone in here. He got up, we both went out, turned all the lights on. Nobody was there. The door was locked. There was nothing. And that was like the first experience I had in that house. But I would hear like whispers a lot, or if I would walk in and everyone was asleep and I would walk in from outside, like if it was at night or whatever, and everyone was sleeping and I was the only one awake and I was coming in from outside, I would hear like voices in the other room. Like it would sound like a TV was on, and then I would go in there and there'd be nothing there. I would hear things walking on the stairs. Sometimes lights would turn on without anybody being there. Just stuff like that. But once I got the dog, there was no more things. It was weird.
Did you know of this, of your house having any type of like history or background to it?
That house, I don't really have any background to it. My parents moved there when I was 5. So I know it was an older house. I think it was built in the 1920s. But I moved out of there like almost 20 years ago now. But
was it like a suburban house or like a country house or anything? Because I always feel like there's always like these stories tied to like country houses, probably just for the aspect of it being more secluded. But
it's not a country house, but the city that I grew up in is a very weird place. Anyone who might be kind of a history buff that likes weird history, look up the Oneida community. They were this utopian society, and the city that I live in was founded around the time that the community split up and kind of went their own ways. But it was this weird. I guess you could, it's not like, I want to say cult, but there's not really religious connotations to it. It was more just like a group of people that had this commune. They built this huge mansion that still stands to this day. It's a bed and breakfast and also an apartment complex. But it's this big mansion that they built to house all the families as part of the community. But it was a community that didn't have possessions. So like if you were, you didn't even have like personal relationships. You would have, you would share husbands and wives, and the entire community would take part in raising the children. So you didn't even have your own children. It was the community's children, and everyone had a hand in raising it. And, the leader, John Humphrey Noyes, had this whole thing in mind that he was going to create this perfect race of people. So he would he had young boys, young teenage boys, not like, you know, super young boys, but young teenage boys he would have, and he would have them practice on old women who had gone through menopause, the pull-out method, so that the only people that were allowed to have children were if he gave the approval for. So what he was trying to do was have the smartest, most athletic, most beautiful people be the only ones allowed to breed. And eventually, obviously, like all these things do, it fell apart. And the city that I grew up in ended up kind of growing out of that community falling apart.
Sounds very Hitler-esque. There's any
on a much smaller. I mean, there was no murder or talk of a master race or ethnic cleansing or anything. But yeah, as far as like trying to create the best out of what you can, yeah.
I mean, I feel like there's a lot of that going on in the world, like. Not to get off topic too much, but even when it comes to, I know it's kind of a weird topic to talk about, but like when people used to have slaves and shit like that, I guarantee you that they would specifically try to be like, all right, here's a strong person. Here's another strong person. I'm going to make these two have a kid. And then,
I actually just watched a video on YouTube about that today that just popped up. It was about how there was forced breeding with the slaves, unfortunately.
I mean, that would, I don't know, like, I guess it's kind of expected at a certain point, especially if you feel like you own people, I guarantee you they saw it as like, this is not me saying this. This is just me assuming the thoughts of somebody in a previous time, but they probably saw it almost like how people would look at like two dogs or two cats and like try to breed a different like species of that, you know?
Yeah. Or stronger species or, you know, yeah.
But kind of a weird thought, just a little bit off topic, but I guess to pull it back, what are some of your guys' favorite stories that you've covered personally?
I'm a big fan of the Mothman stuff just because it bleeds into the Indrid Cold stuff, which is a weird story that's kind of normally left out when the Mothman story is told.
For people that don't know that story, if you'd like to get into that story, I'd love to hear it and push it out to the listeners.
Oh, yeah. Everybody's pretty much familiar with the Mothman story and the sightings in West Virginia. Point Pleasant. What was that, like 76, Mike? When was that?
No, I think it was 69, if I remember right.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. I'm old now, sorry. But there was UFOs became like the main thing during that time. I mean, Mothman sightings took a backseat to how many UFO sightings were taking place. There's reports of UFOs actually buzzing houses that made them rattle, the whole house shake and all that stuff. But there was one UFO sighting that took place on a freeway. And there was a dude named Woody Derenberger who was driving on this freeway. He was a traveling salesman. And he said this giant craft flew ahead of him. He was driving late at night, so the road was almost empty. But it just parked on the freeway and blocked the traffic, which was only him at the time. And he said a person came out. It looked just like a normal person. It approached him and talked to him through telepathy. And told him that his name was Indrid Cold, and he was a visitor from another planet and all this weird stuff. But Woody Derenberger told his story right away, and he made a lot of appearances. He didn't really get paid for it, but what I found interesting about his case was that
sidebar. I always appreciate when somebody goes around telling their stories and they don't get paid for it, because at that point, I feel like you can believe the story more because there's not the money behind it and them just trying to get famous off the story. But sorry, not to distract you too much, but I just wanted to point out my personal thought on that.
Yeah, I agree. But he ended up disappearing for about a month, a little bit over a month. And, you know, him telling his story, there's a lot of people visiting his home to do interviews and stuff like that. But his wife just said that he's with Indrid Cold, and he was literally missing. He couldn't be found. And when he finally returned, he said, yeah, I was with Indrid Cold. They took me to another planet and told this crazy story about this whole race of aliens that look like us. But that happened like right in the middle of all that Mothman stuff.
Yeah, I've always wondered what Mothman is exactly, because there's some extraterrestrial stuff that links to it. There's some cryptid stuff that links to it. And I don't know if you guys have ever heard of, B-Theory?
No.
So I'll probably butcher it, but I'll do it a quick little jump over it. I'll send you guys an episode of mine where somebody talks about it more in depth. And for any of the listeners that haven't heard, if they want to go back and find that episode, it's the one I do with Chaz of the Dead. But he basically talks about how there was this Siberian scientist that discovered how like bees and beetles are able to fly with their bodies being so big, because it doesn't make sense how they can support their own weight. And he essentially discovered how to make this flying machine, and crudely explaining it is basically like a skid with a hand, like a pallet for people. I guess people have different terminology for that, with like a handlebar on it. And then it had these like wing looking things on the side. And when he would fly this thing around, it would be basically like zero gravity. And he would like drop things off of it, and it would create these like little holes and like windows, different things like that. And from underneath of it, the descriptions of what people saw of this thing flying sound a lot like Mothman. And supposedly this guy got rid of his machine and stopped doing it because when he was using it, he realized that there was another handful of people that were doing the same thing. And he was like, all right, maybe I didn't discover something. Maybe this is something I just shouldn't be involved in. So linking back, I guess it's like a third view on the Mothman thing, is that it's potentially another person that discovered how to use this type of technology to fly. And when you do, it like creates, I guess, like gravitational rifts and different weird things like that. And from the ground, it sounds pretty familiar to like the Mothman sightings. And like the straight up lift that people describe with Mothman also sounds a lot like how this guy's flying machine worked, where yes, the technology could be the same for multiple people using it, but the process of how they use the technology could be different, where this guy had a skid, but this person may have figured out how to make like a jetpack type thing, for example. And that could be like what we're perceiving as this Mothman, is somebody that figured out how to make like a backpacking unit that can fly like this.
Hmm. Are you talking about how like it spins?
Yeah.
Kind of like, yeah.
And I've had somebody on my show that claims to have saw Mothman, and he was driving through, I forgot what the fuck the name of that town was.
Mothman was driving? I'm just kidding.
Yeah. But he was driving through the town, and he said that he was it was in the middle of the night, and there was this person that was standing near a park bench, and this guest I had on is... they call him the Bigfoot preacher. He's very religious, and so his natural urge was to get out and be like, "Hey, are you okay, sir? Do you need help?" You know, just trying to be like a good Samaritan. And he said that this thing turned around, looked at him with bright red eyes, and basically took straight up into the sky. And it was nighttime, so he like looked up trying to see it, and he said he pretty much just lost it from it going essentially just straight up.
Whoa, that's crazy.
I would say he might be a cool guest to have. Both of those guys actually probably be cool guests to have in your shows if you guys want to dig more into the Mothman thing. And anybody else that wants to dig into that stuff, his name's actually, yeah, the episode will already be out when this one comes out. Zach S. I forgot how to pronounce his last name, but anybody wants to look into it, that's the episode though. But yeah.
Mothman definitely does have a ET feel to him, but there's other reports of Mothman that continued on afterwards up into modern times and even in different places, like the, what was it, Mike, the Blackbird of Chernobyl?
Yeah, and also the Owl Man of Monin in England.
See, I don't know, do you guys dig into like ancient origin stories, like what I'm referring to is like the Anunnaki origin story?
I found that interesting I don't know, a long time ago. I feel like it's now kind of just ingrained in the ancient alien stuff, so I kind of tried to avoid it for the most part these days. I definitely dug pretty deep into that probably 20 years ago or so. I got really into that shit, and like I was to the point back then that I was like, yeah, aliens definitely, you know, I was a big ancient aliens guy back in the day. But I feel like as I get older, I kind of get more skeptical about a lot of that stuff. And the Anunnaki thing is, it's still interesting to me, but the whole premise behind it is based on the translations of pretty much one dude, that being Zechariah Sitchin. And you have other people that examine the same things that he's translating and saying that it's telling a different story than what he's relating. So then you can dig into the conspiracy. Is there a cover up to hide ancient myths and the reality of human origins, or is this just one guy who fucked up in a translation and got something out of it that isn't really there?
I mean, if it's in there, the only thing that I was going to question is they talk about how Anunnaki mixed their DNA with different species trying to create a slave race, according to I guess the origin stories from that. But considering a lot of these cryptids seem to have like human-like structure, but mixed with other animals, one thing that I've always liked to question is not necessarily Anunnaki, but if there was like a race that came here that mixed their DNA with different animals trying to create some kind of other race, maybe that human-like features that we're thinking of, like, you know, standing upright, arms, legs, isn't actually a human-like feature. Maybe it's from somewhere else, and they theoretically like mix their DNA with a wolf and created like a dog man, mix their DNA with some type of primate, created the Bigfoots, mix their DNA with different types of birds and created these mothmen and owl men, and mixed their DNA with whatever the fuck we are and created us. And I mean, there's a lot of theories going back to like Hinduism and stuff, where they talk about these like people that came from pigs. And considering that our skin is very similar to like pig skin and shit like that, like maybe we were theoretically at one point could have came from like pigs, and maybe Bigfoots are what came from apes, you know, just an out there theory that I kind of throw around in my head a little bit. But what's your guys' opinion on that?
I like to think of Bigfoot more as like this interdimensional thing. And to me, I've talked about this plenty of times on our show. But I've got this theory that kind of brings everything together. And really this theory kind of developed when I started researching the Skinwalker Ranch like 10 years ago. And the reason being, and I know at this point, a lot of people, are very familiar with the Skinwalker Ranch because it's a show on History Channel now. So it's kind of become like a cliche thing, but 10 years ago, it wasn't talked about very much. At least outside of like paranormal circles, I should say. It wasn't something that the mainstream people were aware of. But on the Skinwalker Ranch, you've got all this phenomena occurring. You've got UFO sightings. You've got poltergeist activity. You've got cryptid sightings. And all this stuff comes together. And when you look at some of the stranger Bigfoot cases in the woods, and you get a lot of phantom knocks that occur that are attributed to Bigfoot. You've got rock throwing that's attributed to Bigfoot. You've got strange growls or hoots and noises. Now, because you're in the woods, you're thinking that's, you know, that's a separate sort of thing. But if you look at weird poltergeist activity at like a homestead, and you've got strange growling noises, you've got phantom knocking. In some cases, some poltergeist cases, you've got rocks raining down on the house, or even in some cases raining down inside the house. And so it makes me start thinking, when you start looking at things in the paranormal field, and you don't compartmentalize them and saying, oh, this is an alien thing, or oh, this is a ghost thing, or this is a weird unknown animal that we have yet to discover, and start looking at the similarities between a lot of these cases, even events where there's a lot of UFO activity, like the Hudson Light UFO, or the Hudson Valley UFO flap in New York that occurred. A lot of the people at the time that the UFO sightings were taking place were experiencing weird lights just appearing in their house or outside of their house. They were experiencing poltergeist-like activity inside their homes. They were hearing phantom knocks. So you see this stuff repeating, but the way, like, it seems like the main, whatever the main sighting is what's focused on. So depending on what's going on, it's either a ghost, or it's aliens, or it's Bigfoot, but they're all displaying these same characteristics. So it seems like all this stuff might be related in the fact that it's part of our reality that we're just not really aware of. It's not something, it's not like when you walk outside and you breathe air and see sunshine, and that's, you know, that's the reality of our world. We live in a world where we can breathe oxygen and feel warmth from the sun, but it's like just a half step over, almost, where it kind of overlaps with our world. And I think when it actually comes into contact with our world is when we have these events that take place And I think in some areas of the world, we've got areas where the contact takes place much more often. And whether it's deliberately done by whatever these entities are on the other side, or whether it's by chance and it's being exploited, and these intelligences or beings or whatever they are able to come through, I think that's when we start having the paranormal activity. I don't necessarily think ghosts are dead people, just like I don't think UFOs are necessarily aliens from another planet. And I don't think Bigfoot is an undiscovered species of hominid. I think all this shit's related, and we're just trying to, because they seem different at a certain level, we're kind of ignoring the similarities and putting them into these different categories.
I mean, I always like to imagine it as there's certain areas where there's like a thinning of the veil, so to speak. Even like paranormal stuff. I feel like if there's any type of like stories that I seem to be the most skeptical about, but not for like a bad reason, just because I want to like try to rationalize it as much in my head to try to get to the base of it. Cause if you just go into something saying it's ghosts, you're never really going to get to the bottom of it, you know? But the one I'm the most like skeptical about is ghosts, but not for the aspect of like them not existing, but them not existing how we imagine that they exist. Like somebody dies, their spirit gets trapped here, and then they walk around forever. I like to view it from a couple different angles. One is that if there's a traumatic enough experience that happens in one spot, it sends like a ripple through time, where it's not that those ghosts can see you. Like say there was like a bloody battle, for example, or like a murder in a house, and then you see the apparitions like acting it out in a sense and not really paying attention to you. I've always wondered if that's more of like something traumatic so bad happened there that it just resonates through time, where it's not that there's like a conscious spirit there, but you can just, it's kind of like watching a movie of something that's already happened. If time isn't necessarily linear.
Right. Have you heard of the stone tape theory?
I've never heard that wording, but if you want to explain it, I'm sure it's maybe a theory that I have heard of before.
It's basically the best way to phrase it is like time loops, maybe that like caused by traumatic events that replay themselves in a specific area.
Yeah. 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 Because the other part of that too, that I was going to connect into too, is that, I've heard stories about where somebody, when they were like 10, they're sitting on the couch and they saw something coming down the stairs and they freaked out and ran. And then 10 years later, they're coming down the stairs and they see something on the couch and it takes off. And then that also kind of makes me wonder if it's like a thinning of the veil with time not necessarily being linear, because that person could have theoretically saw themselves at two separate times, didn't know how to perceive themselves, thought it was a ghost, but it was never really a ghost. It was them at two separate times in the same location.
Right.
Because I've heard like a good handful of stories about things like that. And then the other theory that I like to entertain as far as like paranormal things go, is that, again, it goes back to it being a thinning of the veil, but it could be another dimension on the other side where you're seeing them as a ghost, but they're seeing you as a ghost. And they're obviously, you and the other thing are totally different consciousnesses from different dimensions, realities, whatever you want to call it. And you're both perceiving each other as ghosts because there's like a thin spot where you can see through, partly see through the veil, and you know, the image doesn't fully make it back. So it looks like a ghostly apparition, you know?
Right. Yeah, wasn't there a story from the Skinwalker Ranch stuff, Mike, where there a portal opened up?
Yeah, there's a lot of stories about the different portals opening up. The original family, the Sherman family that lived there, would report this orange light that would appear in the sky, and at different times they would see craft come out of it. At one time, they said that they saw what looked like a blue sky on the other side, even though it was the middle of the night. But it was the way that it appeared in the sky, it was almost like two-dimensional. Like they could see it from a certain vantage point, but if they moved, it would just take on the appearance of like an orange line. So it like wasn't fully three-dimensional. It's weird.
See, that area in particular, Skinwalker Ranch, I've always wondered if it's something almost like the Alaskan Triangle or like the Bermuda Triangle, where it's like a weird concentrated area where there's a thinning there, but maybe it's like super concentrated. And that's why there's so many sightings there, and skinwalkers could be literally something coming from another reality and coming into this reality, or maybe they accidentally walk through. And then when they're over here and then they see somebody, they're like, oh shit, what do we do? And they do whatever their species does, which may be chameleon themselves into something else, you know, where we look at that like it's some kind of superpower, but that just might be like normal to whatever that thing is from that other reality.
Right. An ability that species has.
And then, I mean, those go back to like Native American legend and shit like that too. So like the other weird part about it, where you can kind of get into like the whole idea of like manifestation, is that like the Native Americans had legend about like pretty much if you talk about it, they'd show. So there's not a lot written down about skinwalkers because they didn't want to even talk about them because they would show up when they do. So again, it goes into like, is that manifesting them, or is it almost like, I hate using the term simulation theory because people think of like a computer, like a program, but like an organic simulation, where maybe that's like what's on the outside, you know what I mean? And there's like certain spots where like the I don't want to say programming glitches, but I guess that's probably the best terminology I have for it. Like an organic program glitch, or like a spot that doesn't work out properly. And then that's where like whatever's on the outside, or maybe something from another simulated area comes into this area.
Hmm.
Sorry, I get weird with the theories, especially when we start getting farther into the show. I'll just start throwing some weird stuff at you guys.
I mean, with the theory, like the simulation theory, or the fact that the idea that we're in a matrix, or you know, however you label that specific theory, I think if that were the reality we live in, it would make a lot of sense for the weirdness that goes on. And, you know, it would be super easy to explain away a lot of that shit. It's not weird. It's just the way the matrix was programmed. It's just what we're experiencing while we're part of the matrix or whatever.
It's a glitch.
Yeah, it's a glitch. That's not a UFO. That's a glitch. But, I don't know. To me, the matrix theory, it doesn't, you can drive yourself insane really thinking about it. And the only way you can kind of talk yourself out of it is saying, well, I feel, you know, I can feel, I'm aware of my feelings and I'm aware of how this makes me feel. And I'm aware of how this is. And you can look at yourself and be like, well, I know that I'm not a simulation because I experience all this stuff. But then you can drive yourself crazy by thinking, well, they're not a simulation because they feel too. But then what if that's just part of your simulation? What if you're the only thing in the simulation that can feel that? So you can really get yourself in a crazy place the deeper you go with that. But
I've always wondered too, not to cut you off, but like, yeah, if there's like a handful of people that may be actually
interacting
and you don't even know who they are, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that'd be wild. And there's just enough people sprinkled around so that there's genuine human connection and emotion while everybody else is just a fucking computer program.
Yeah. Like they're trying to almost like harvest how you operate, you know, like,
oh, wow,
whoever the powers that be may be. But in order to do that, you have to have real people, but yeah, spread far enough apart that they don't interact with each other, but they interact with whatever you want to call it, the AI, NPCs, the things that are collecting information on how to theoretically be a person.
Some way through the matrix. Yeah, that's a scary thought. I don't know. the whole matrix thing, if you think too hard about it, and if you really like, I could definitely see someone with a specific brain chemistry just going far off a deep end and like really getting crazy with the matrix theory.
Dude, because honestly though, you can back it up with a lot of stuff, but it's like, again, one of those things that you'll never know until you're on the other side. But even just like the patterns of things, like, right, it's just,
or the way that our reality is structured, you know, like we all buy into this charade of money, you know, and we got rid of the gold standard back in 73. So what the hell value does our money have other than what we all agree it has?
Dude, same with anything in reality. Like, even people that have power, you only have the power that you give them.
it's all a fucking fairy tale and an illusion. So, like, in that regard, I could see, yeah, it, because when you look at it, we're all kind of like in this weird, well, I shouldn't say all of us. Some of us are fortunate enough that they've been able to get out of the 9-to-5 grind, but most of us are in this 9-to-5 grind where we spend most of our waking hours away from the place that we pay money to live in.
Away from the people that you're making the money to support too.
Exactly. Exactly. And then we, you know, acquire more items that we don't have time to enjoy because we're too busy working to afford those. But, and it's something that we've all, as a world, as a civilization, we've all agreed that this is what makes the most sense.
Even though we all hate it. And it doesn't
every
feel
single
right.
person fucking hates it. Every single fucking person hates that 9-to-5 grind. Anyone who's a part of it. And we all agree to keep it going. And, you know, people make the argument, well, what's a better way? And that's not for me to figure out. You know, I'm not president of the universe. I can't make laws on how society should be, but it's, we all know, everybody knows that there's a better way, but nobody is able to find that better way because we're all stuck in this fucking grind.
And we got to bring it back to us. Small community and living off the land. That's what I think it is. Yeah, because I have a lot of theories too about like what's the number one pictures you see that people decorate their house with?
I think I'd be a wrong person to ask about that. I've got a weird sense of decor.
Well, usually I feel like most people, they decorate with pictures of outside the woods, things like that. So it's like, it's satisfying. They don't realize it, but it's consciously satisfying a primal urge that you want to be there. You don't want to be here, but because of pop culture, movies, all that shit, it makes you scared of the woods. Like, the city is safe. The woods are scary, even though you have a lot more of a chance of dying in the city than you would in the woods, as far as I'm concerned. And at least in the woods, you can defend yourself, or you can't defend yourself against a crackhead with a gun unless you have a fucking gun. Mm-hmm. But like, we have this pull where we're pulling away from like the natural way that we're intended to be. And we can all feel that pull, and we all subconsciously are trying to pull back, but we don't realize it. And now we're like, oh, how do we live how we could be happy? And it's like, why don't you just look at yourself on the inside subconsciously and realize that you want a connection with people locally. You feel good when you buy food from people that you see the person that grew the food. You like, their most people, their most peaceful times are when they're in the middle of the woods. So it's like, you already know the answer subconsciously. You'll just, we need to bring it back. You know what I mean?
Yeah. People are too scared.
I agree though. I think when we, as a race or as a civilization or whatever, as a society, when we decided to separate ourselves from nature, that's when things devolved for us. And you, I mean,
people can't even do things for themselves anymore. Yeah, like the average person doesn't know how to hunt. They don't know how to fish. They don't know how to start a fire without a fucking lighter and gas or something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And we look at us as being civilized. We're a civilized species now, but,
we're just caught up relying on everybody else to do everything for us because we can't do it ourselves anymore.
Yeah, well, and not only that, it's we've become complacent in our technology. With the technology we have, like, we have access, you know, in the palm of our hands, we have access to infinite knowledge. But what do most people do with that?
5-second dance videos, of course. Yeah.
go on TikTok or Facebook or you know, play a game. Like, most people don't utilize the internet in the way that I think it was first conceived of, because of
you could
course,
learn something new every single day every and single still day. Not run out of things to Never. Learn about, but instead people are watching the same dance 300 times,
right? Just different people doing it. It's yep. like, oh, let's see how this person does dance. Oh, that's a good one. All right, let's see how this person does. Yeah, that's a good one. But it's we were civilized, but I think by civilizing us, it takes away what our what the meaning of life really is, and like what you're really limiting yourself on what you are able to achieve by fitting yourself within the idea of civilization. You know, go out and go into the woods, learn how to grow things that you can live off of. That's the important shit. The imaginary money that we make is bullshit. And really, when it comes down to it, like, we're all comfortable in our homes and everything, but if you learn how to live off the land and you learn how to build shelter and provide your own warmth and preserve your own food and grow your own food and hunt your own food and provide for yourself, I think that's where you're going to find the biggest enjoyment in your life. And I think that's where you're going to get the most out of reality. I think we're kind of tied down to this idea of civilization and working and making money and acquiring things. But who's really happy? Like, you get something and it's cool and you're like, oh, this is a cool thing. But on a day-to-day basis, does that thing make you happy beyond really that initial obtaining of that thing?
Speaking of that, on another messed up level too, it's like, what matters the most to most people is their kids. And like, realistically, you work 8 hours at a job that you don't want to be at to go home and see your kids for like 4 to 6 hours before they go to bed. So technically, whoever watches your kids during the day sees your kids more than you get to see your kids.
Right.
And they're like the whole premise of like, why, I mean, coming from a parent, I'm sure not everybody feels the same way, but like, they're what keep me going. And yet they're like the people I feel that I see the least. And that's not even because of me. That's just by design of how society's set up.
Yeah, it's not the best design.
Because it's like, especially nowadays, man, it's like the teachers are the ones raising the kids more so than the parents. And with the whole, I don't know if you guys dig into like the whole wokeism agenda in school and shit, but it's like they're trying to like pull the kids away from their families, where they're even to the point now where they're like, I was hearing some news thing today where some kid was talking to his mom about how the school pretty much said, if you get bullied, things like that, you're not supposed to go home and tell your parents because it'll piss off the parents, and they'll come home and they'll come back to the school and be all pissed off. And, you know, going into, I don't know how you guys feel about the whole trans thing, so I try not to bring it up unless I know how somebody feels about it. But just even the fact of like, they're pushing the whole trans agenda on kids, and then they're telling their kids, don't tell your parents about it. Like, that's weird, man. Like, literally, it's like somebody else is raising your kids while you're just trying to support your kids.
Yeah. And we always, I remember growing up, I, not to date myself or anything, but I grew up in the 80s. So I was very familiar with the satanic panic thing. And a big part of that, because for any of you young kids out there, the satanic panic was this thing that happened during the 80s where there was this whole conspiracy that schools and that there were a lot of these schools that were part of satanic cults that were trying to molest and potentially sacrifice children to Satan. And that kind of got involved with Dungeons and Dragons. And if you play Dungeons and Dragons, you worship the devil and you'll probably kill yourself and your friends at some point while you're playing and all that shit. But growing up in that time, you learn about stranger danger, and I know they teach kids about stranger danger now, but it was always like, if an adult tells you not to tell your parents something, then it typically means what they're telling you is wrong.
You should immediately tell your parents. Right. Tell you that's, not to tell your parents.
when another adult tells you not to tell your parents, that's the thing you should be telling your parents about. So the fact that teachers are telling kids, and I don't know how often this takes place. If you're going to teach kids something, just be upfront about it. You know, be open about it. Allow parents to be in on the discussion so that parents are aware of what their kids are learning and they have the opportunity to talk to their kids as well. And I think that's the biggest thing, is having a dialogue between the school and the parents to make sure that that they're able to have I think that you don't want to confuse the kids. So you want to have that open dialogue so that you don't You're not confusing kids with mixed messaging, and everyone is.
They almost feel like they have to live a secret life if you imprint that into them, you know? Like, right. Their parents could be totally okay with whatever they're fucking trying to do. I don't want to go into trans aspect of it, but just anything in general, you know? Like, they could, a parent could be totally okay with, like, if a kid wants to, you know, play this sport instead of that sport. But the way that the school system's set up, it's like, we'll switch you over, but don't tell your parents. You know what I mean? Like, but you never, like, you're just going to teach these kids to live a life of hiding things from the people that care about them the most, thinking that those people that care about them the most won't understand it. When realistically, if you want somebody to understand it, what you got to do is have an actual conversation with them about it instead of trying to hide it from them.
Yeah, exactly. When you start making it like sketchy, that's when you got to wonder what the fuck is going on. Why are you being sketchy?
Like, then it almost becomes taboo at that point,
too. Right? Right. Yeah. And that's what makes it taboo, really, is when you keep the secrets and you don't, you know, you're not open with what's going on, that then it becomes taboo and it becomes this dirty little secret. And then, you know, that creates a whole other thing. But I like to think that that's not going to be something that's widespread. As far as I know, that's not something that has been discussed in my kids' school, but my kids are a little older now. They're you know, teenagers. So maybe they got past that early indoctrination before it became a thing. I don't know.
Or maybe it's already indoctrinated into
it. Maybe keeping secrets from me. Maybe I don't know. Maybe I don't know what's going on in school.
Because surprisingly, like, I'm a millennial, and my generation is, I don't want to, like, I hate using the word progressive because it sounds like it's this huge positive thing, but like, most people in my generation are progressive, and that's not the way I am, because I don't see it as progressive to, I don't know, like, without getting too deep into the whole like opinions on things, I don't know, I just don't think a lot of the things that people are looking at as good things that are progressive are right. And that's it. And if you don't agree with that, then society looks at you like you're a piece of shit, you know? Like, I don't know, it's kind of weird, kind of a weird back and forth, that it's like, you can have an opinion, but you can't have an opinion about certain things because it's progressive and it's what we should be doing. But it's like, half the shit that's progressive that we, quote, should be doing isn't something we should be doing. Like, just even the fact that there's a term for minor attracted adults, or whatever the fuck that they call themselves, minor attracted persons, like, that's a progressive concept, but like, get the fuck out of here with that. Like, why is it that we're trying to normalize pedophilia? And if you're into like the whole satanic aspect of things, you could look at, like, I'm not saying this is like necessarily my belief on it, but just looking at it from this perspective, the whole trans movement is, like I said, I'm not like, this isn't necessarily my full views on it, but like, coming from somebody that believes in, like the Bible, things like that, it could be looked at as trying to destroy the image of God and create this like half breed species, I guess you could say. Like I said, not really my view on it. My view on it is just that it's just not morally right, because your gender isn't something you should get to pick. It's just something that you're biologically born with. But yeah, just, I'm kind of going in circles on this one, but that's kind of my views on it. But I don't know, what were you guys stand with all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, for me, most of the time we stay away from anything political, or it's just, I don't know. We try to keep our show as a spot where people don't have to hear about that type of stuff, because it's everywhere. To me, it's just, I don't know, people are reacting like this thing has just like grown, like sprouted up out of nowhere. I'm a big student of history, and all forms of fucking people have always existed. It's every type of person's always been there. So people just, it's a level of pettiness on most people, you know. Just, I don't know. I don't know why people are so interested in what's supposed to be like one of the most private things about somebody's, you know, life and their person. It's people are just, it's real entitled thing today. Like one thing that bothers me is like most like virtue signaling. It's people aren't just happy with believing in something and practicing that. They have to scream it out so they get a pat on the back for it. It's just everything's set up for every type of conflict you can wish for.
It's funny you bring that up because today I was laughing at the fact that I was driving down the street with my girlfriend and there's this one street that we don't normally drive down. We're driving down the street and these are handmade signs, of course. So obviously these people probably knew each other, coordinated with each other to do this. But I saw somebody that had like a hand-painted Ukraine flag. I had somebody that had a hand-painted Black Lives Matter thing in their yard. And then there was somebody else that had something about pretty much like pro wearing masks. And I'm just like, okay, well, if you didn't know these were good people, they had to make it obvious by putting a sign in the middle of their front yard, because if you didn't know their views, they wanted you to know them.
Right. That's the curse of social media. It tricked everybody into thinking that people give a shit about what you think.
Literally, nobody fucking cares.
Nobody fucking cares, man. And it's just another way for people to club up, I guess. I don't know.
But I mean, that's kind of how you create power, though, is that you have to divide people into groups.
Right.
And, I mean, I noticed this because there's this lady that's running in Michigan. Her name's Tudor Dixon. And her whole like ad thing is pretty much like, I'm pro guns and I'm anti wokeism in school. And with hearing that, I was like, damn, bro, us conspiracy, whatever you want to call it, open-minded type people just became a demographic to the country. Like, what the fuck happened?
Yeah, we were talking.
The funny thing is, we won't vote for that person because we're spiritorial-minded, and we're like, all right, this person's got some other agenda here. That's why they're trying to do this. So, like, they're fucking themselves by trying to come into this demographic because it doesn't work because we question everything.
Yeah.
But we got pretty sidetracked on that one. I guess to try to put a little cherry back on the top of the end, I got one of your guys' favorite stories that you covered, but I didn't get the other person's favorite stories that you covered. So let's touch into that a little bit.
Okay. So I've got a bunch of... my favorite traditionally, I guess, was the Skinwalker Ranch and Mothman. Just because of the amounts of weirdness that happened in both cases. And with the Mothman, it spawned a lot of shit after the Mothman sightings even took place. There's more shit that went on. And it's just such this weird amalgamation of different things that happened, which is why I also like the Skinwalker Ranch. But there's other ranches that I found out about recently. And I don't know what the deal is with ranches, but... they seem to have, there's these other ranches that have a similar sort of thing going on to Skinwalker Ranch. And we covered one recently called the Stardust Ranch, which is very similar, except in this one, the dude actually had alien entities appearing on his ranch and claims to have been able to kill them with a katana sword, which I fucking love, by the way.
Did he describe these entities? Were they like Skinwalker like, or
they looked like grays.
Why do I just imagine some dude, like he's the only one that sees them, and there's just this guy swinging around a katana in the middle of the woods.
Well, I guess him and his wife both witnessed it. They had been abducted a few times, and he, it started out, he beat one with a baseball bat when he woke up and was at the foot of his bed.
Straight sign style.
Yeah, yeah. So he just grabs his baseball bat, starts swinging, and then it phased out after he made the first contact with it, but he did hit it. So then he said when he would see them, they would always kind of appear like not in the same room as him, but like where he could see them. It was almost like this cat and mouse game they would play.
Like they were trying to stand far enough back that he couldn't make contact with them. Like,
right.
What he was trying to do.
They were observing him at the same time. So he would, if he caught them in his periphery, he would start to kind of make a act like he didn't see them, go about his own business, act normal, and then try to sneak up on them with his fucking katana sword. So he said like one time there was one, he was in the living room and it was peeking around the corner and he saw it out of the corner of his eye, but he didn't react to it. Didn't, you know, make any sort of notice that he saw it, and he got up, got a glass of water, brought it back into the living room, sat down, it was still there. So then he gets up, walks to his bedroom like nothing's going on, goes out, grabs his katana sword, sets it in the hallway out of the line of sight where he saw this thing, and he just waits till he sees it again. Then he gets up and walks, grabs his sword so it can't see it, walks around, and then fucking decapitated the thing.
Dude, I dig the katana, and it makes sense too. Yes. It's like a baseball bat is blunt contact, so it's like it's not right. going to hit it on the first kill. But if you slice something with a katana,
yeah,
like, it doesn't have that time to be able to be like, oh shit, and like phase out, right. You know?
Yeah, yeah, it's hilarious. I love it. And he said he kept the body for a while, not knowing what to do with it, and then
so I'm guessing it like disappeared. It phases itself out when it's hit, but if you like kill it, it can't phase itself out, so it's solid mass in front of you, right? Yeah. It's not like a
he said hologram. You have to kill it before it phases out, because if you make contact with it, it's gonna phase out. So he said you gotta go for a fatal blow. So that's why with this one he decapitated it. But he claimed that he's killed a bunch of them on his time in the ranch. His story is fucking wild, man. It's a lot like the Skinwalker Ranch, but more batshit. I don't know if I really buy into it, but I fucking love the story. It's fantastic. And the dude wrote a book about it, about his own experiences. So it's
do you know what the book's called offhand?
Yeah, it's just called Stardust Ranch.
Oh, Stardust Ranch.
Yeah. So it's really just him like talking about his experiences on the ranch, but I feel like because he's writing about his experience, he's not writing the story you know, about the experiences. It's more a story of him as the hero surrounded by these experiences. So I think you're kind of getting
turns into like a fishtail.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely embellished. I don't want to say that the dude is not telling the truth, but I'm gonna say that I don't fully buy his story.
I mean, still interesting all the same.
Yeah, yeah.
And as absolutely. Far as like the ranches go, I feel like it's not so much just like the ranches. It may be the fact that maybe I don't want to say ancient people, but people a couple hundred years ago maybe knew that there was specific locations that there was phenomenon that happened. And as time went on, it got lost in time. And of course, like our basis for all the big cities are where these people were choosing to colonize hundreds of years, like a couple hundred years ago. And the more rural areas are places they obviously chose not to. So that being said, a lot of these ranches are the first property that's built on these locations that we, you know of in record, not including if there was like Native American civilizations on these places. So maybe that's more so what it is. It's just the fact that it's a uncharted land that there was already phenomenon happening on, and a ranch is just happens to be what you build in these wide open areas.
Yeah, that's definitely the case with Skinwalker, because the whole area around Skinwalker has a history of, I guess, paranormal activity. But going back to when the natives were more prominent in the area, when before the Europeans came over and started kicking everybody out, a lot of it has to do with this curse of the Skinwalker. Like apparently that is where it all started, when a Skinwalker cursed the land. And I don't know what that curse entailed, whether it was like they summoned something or thinned the veil between realities. I don't know exactly what went on there, but it's claimed that the whole area is in the path of the Skinwalker, meaning that the Skinwalker walks through that area, and wherever the Skinwalker goes, bad things happen. And then this ranch sprung up in the middle of this area. And I don't like, I also wonder if animals have something to do with it. Like with the Skinwalker Ranch, it was a cattle ranch, and the cattle seemed to be targeted during that time. But with Stardust Ranch, the owner, the guy who ended up buying it, he raised Rottweilers and was breeding Rottweilers, and his dogs ended up being targeted during this whole thing. So I wonder if like having a large group of animals living with humans in a remote area that already has thin veils, like if that kind of prompts it more, or if the animals are just the unfortunate victims when shit goes down. I don't know.
I mean, it might just be more like a food source possibility, because like going into like the Native American legends of skinwalkers, it's not that they're like their own species. It's somebody that committed an awful act, which from like what I've gathered, one of the things that you would do to become a skinwalker, of course, is like eat human flesh. And then one of the other main things you'd have to do is kill a close family member, meaning like a brother, a sister, a mother, a father. So maybe that's part of the curse, is just the fact that it's like that forbidden fruit that you're not supposed to eat your own species. So maybe that was like ground one of like where there was some type of like an awful winter or something, for example, and they resorted to cannibalism and they started taking on these other characteristics because of cannibalism. So then the other Native Americans started telling stories about how that's cursed land because it's like a cannibalistic land, you know? And I'm sure that even if you're not into the whole woo-woo concept of it, maybe eating human flesh will take a toll on your body, and because it's not something that your body, I'm sure your body biologically knows it's something you're not supposed to be eating on top of that. So you might start to contort and become different because of it. And I mean, if you're going into like woo-woo type stuff, like maybe it completely reforms you into something else completely.
Yeah, like the Wendigo type deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like from my understanding of them, it's kind of like the same premise on like how you become one. But as far as like where they're seen at, the Wendigos are supposed to be seen normally during like winter, cold areas, cold months. And what people like to rationalize with that is the fact that they are pretty much like decaying corpses. So they have to stay in cold places, otherwise they'll rot and fall apart faster, because one of the main things you're supposed to be able to use to kill a Wendigo is fire, which would make sense because, again, it's like burning the flesh. And then people have theories about how you don't really see Wendigo sightings during summer or things like that, because they could theoretically just disappeared back to wherever the fuck they come from. Or maybe it's possible that they like bury themselves to be able to be in the heat until the following year.
I think it has more to do with the area where the legends spawn, which seem to be mostly northern U.S., southern Canada. And the whole thing has to do with eating human flesh, which during the summer you wouldn't need to, because you'd have access to, you know, growing crops or animals that are around. But when the winter occurs, everything's dead. You can't eat plants. Animals are hard to come by because they're hibernating or they're also in survival mode. So then you have to resort to what's available, which is other people. And so I think that's why the connotation with the winter and everything comes in, because that's the only time of the year when you'd really need to eat another person, because you'd have access to nothing else.
I mean, it's also possible, too, that it could have been stories made up to push people away from cannibalism, because, you know, when you're in a cabin, there's nobody around and you're starving and there's other people. Like, if there's nobody around to be like, hey, that's bad, people are just going to do what they have to do to survive. But if they create these legends that you'll turn into these different creatures because of it, then people are going to think about it more when they're just alone by themselves and they're like, oh, I'd rather die than become one of those creatures.
Right.
And then that being said, maybe it's possible that what's the word I'm looking for? Like a totem or like there's just, yeah. Yeah. Like it was created because we all manifested it to be created.
Yeah. I like almost like a tulpa type effect.
That's the word I was looking for. Tulpa. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that is also a very real possibility. You know, you get enough people, it's the same type of deal as like a religion sort of thing. Like you get enough people buying into a belief, that belief becomes reality.
And I mean, if it's a newer belief too, it probably won't be as in tune and fine grain, where if it's something that's been manifested for generations, 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 it could eventually become not like a more solid creature, if that makes sense. Like where it takes on a life of its own because of so many generations creating it and manifesting it, versus like if it's like a newer thing, like anybody that's thinking about it is manifesting it to become what it's going to become. But if it's something that's been around for generations, it's takes on its own life and becomes its own thing aside from people creating it, if that makes sense.
Right. It actually starts to exist.
Yeah, exactly. So, because, yeah, it's not like, even if people don't believe in it anymore, like it still was already present enough and prevalent enough that it exists in its own way.
Right.
But I guess since we're starting to get towards the end of the show, I usually like to do about an hour and a half or so. I feel like that's like the sweet spot, and we're about hitting that. I definitely want to have you guys come back on the show. But before I get you, before you guys get going, I like to do words of wisdom from the guests to the listeners. So I guess going one by one, if there's anything that you'd like to bestow on the listeners, what would it be?
Oh, as far as doing a podcast, just always remember to do it for yourself and, you know, keep the level of quality that makes you happy and don't worry about anything else.
That's good words to go by, even besides a podcast.
Yeah, apply that to everything. You know, just do it to the level that you're happy with. There's no reason to reach for other people's standards or levels.
Yeah, do you in your own time, and what's supposed to happen will happen.
Right.
Then, how about you, man?
I would say, you know, in terms of, because we talked about weird shit a lot on here. I would say in terms of researching and getting involved in the paranormal or ufology or whatever you want to call it, cryptology or cryptozoa, whatever the fuck they call Bigfoot people.
Cryptozoologist.
Yes, thank you. I should fucking know that. I'm sorry.
It's anyway. One of those things that slips your. You know it, but it slips your mind when you're on.
Yeah,
the spot,
I'm like, no, so. Cryptology. That's not what it's called. That's what
cryptocurrency. Oh no,
yeah,
that's
cryptocurrency. Yeah, that's what it is. When dealing with cryptocurrency, no. When dealing with any of that stuff, I think to keep both an open and skeptic mind is very important. Remaining skeptical in the face of the fantastic will help keep you grounded. But keeping an open mind will also allow some of that magic to come through. And I think somewhere in between the skeptical and overly open mind is where the truth lies. And I think, you know, when we look into a lot of this stuff, it's easy to get lost in there and just kind of become like a hard-nosed skeptic where you have to debunk everything, or like the wide-eyed believer where everything is real. And I think it's really easy to fall into one of those two camps depending on where your personal opinions lie and also the research that you're doing and the slant that the research takes. But I feel like ultimately we live in a world where wonderful and weird things happen. And I think it's part of the natural order of the world. And we just don't really have a reliable way to, I guess relate to it. So we kind of try to do the best we can and explain it in ways that make sense to us, which was why you get a bunch of people experiencing similar things that are saying it's different causes. So I guess long-winded way of saying stay open-minded but skeptical.
Yeah, you got to find the balance. That's what it is. Yeah. Just like most things in life, because I'm a firm believer, like you said, that the truth's in the middle. So like when I do research, for example, say I have three cases with one thing that's similar between them, and then the other things are all different. the thing that I'm going to keep my eye on the most is the thing that's similar between those three things. Same with like anything, man. You look up like an elixir to, or, you know, I don't want to say elixir, but you look up like something you can make at home to like help with like a sore throat, you know, and you find three different recipes, but there's three common ingredients in those, and then all the rest is different. The thing that I'm going to take as truth and that what I'm going to look at as the most important information is going to be that thing that's similar between all stories, and the other stuff I'll, of course, listen to, but that's not going to be like my main focus of the information, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I get that completely. To me, the big interest comes from the similarities in cases, not so much the differences.
Yeah, because that's where you start finding the truth, is when you start being able to connect the similarities.
Yeah,
we don't cover Bigfoot a lot, you know, just for the sake of it being done to death. Basically, we can't do a better job than what's already out there. But to me, you know, the idea of a giant ape-like creature running around the woods is awesome. The fact that it's seen by so many different people all over our country is even more awesome. But what makes it really fucking cool is that it's seen on every fucking landmass on this planet, and it has throughout history. That's what makes it cool.
You want to do some crazy diving into Bigfoot? Have you guys dug into like Yowie legends?
Yeah, I've read a lot of like all the different, you know, abominable snowmen, Bigfoot, Yowie, wild men, all that stuff.
Because I was gonna say, I feel like the stuff from Australia, it dates back farther than most Bigfoot legends. And they have the most like prevalent, where if you look at encounter stories, people finding footprints, all that kind of shit, it seems like the most frequent place that it happens seems to be Australia. And I don't know, when it comes to like Bigfoot, that's the information that I follow into the most, is the Australian stuff about them, just because of the fact that I feel like it's the oldest information that we do have on those. So I feel like the oldest information is probably more than likely the source. So if like we date back Bigfoots to Australia before anywhere else, maybe that's like the origin of where they possibly came from, and then they spread out from there, you know. And then just like people, they adapted to the environment that they live in. So like the Yeti started developing white fur to hide itself, and, you know, thicker fur, I'm sure, to stay in the cold, just like, you know, people, where you got like white people that develop beards and shit like that to stay warm, because we're intended to be in colder regions. But just a probability. I like to, you know, expand into things, and I don't know, just try to find, I feel like when you start digging into anything, you want to go back to the farthest point that you can possibly find and then work forward from there.
Yeah,
especially on cryptids and stuff, because it's like, I feel like the most solid information is more than likely the like tribal or aboriginal or whatever the ancient people's views are on them, and then all the modern stuff kind of brings in the sciencey twist. But just like he was kind of saying, you got to find the balance in the middle, because the ancient people will talk about them from like a magic perspective, the modern day people look at them from a scientific perspective, but the truth of that is in the middle. But I guess since we're at the end of the show here, for anybody that enjoyed the conversation and they want to come find you guys, where did they come find you guys at?
Oh, we got the whatcast.com, and we got social media is all the whatcast. You can just look up the whatcast pretty much anywhere you listen to podcasts, or on Instagram, Facebook, not anymore. They shut down podcasts on there. They gave us some weird notice to where they closed down our page because they're removing podcasts from there. But yeah, we're pretty easy to get a hold of. Try to get back to everybody.
Well, I appreciate you guys making the time to come on the show, and I had a lot of fun in this conversation.
Yeah, thank you, Shane, for having us on. I'm a fan of your show as well, and it's awesome to get to sit down and talk with you.
I appreciate that, man. Time, man.
Thank you for having us.
And I definitely have to have you guys pop onto my other show, and if you guys are down, I'd be more than happy to have you guys come back on this show, and we can get into some more awesome conversation now that I've gotten a feel for you guys. Now we can bounce into the theories and open conversation style a bit more.
Yeah, anytime.
So, for anybody that enjoyed the show, thank you for listening, and I'll catch you on the next one. Have a good night, everybody.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.